I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The result of the voting is as follows. 14 votes in favor, 0 vote against, 1 abstention. The draft resolution has been adopted as Resolution 27-28-2024.
Israel's continuing to attack Gaza despite a vote Monday by the UN Security Council calling for a temporary ceasefire during the month of Ramadan. The U.S. abstained, sparking outrage from Israel, which wanted the U.S. to veto the measure. We'll speak with Craig McIver, a former top U.N. official who resigned in protest over Israel's assault on Gaza. But first to London, where a British court has put the extradition of Julian Assange on hold until the United States provides more assurances about how the WikiLeaks publisher will be treated in U.S. custody.
Today's decision is astounding. The courts recognize that Julian is exposed to a flagrant denial of his freedom of expression rights, that he is being discriminated against on the basis of his nationality, an Australian, and that he remains exposed to the death penalty.
We'll hear from Julian Assange's wife, Stella, then speak to the British MP, former Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn. Plus, a judge in New York has decided the first of Donald Trump's four criminal trials will begin April 15th. We'll speak to Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist David K. Johnston. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The High Court in London has put the extradition of Julian Assange on hold until the United States provides more assurances about how the WikiLeaks publisher will be treated in U.S. custody. The court asked the U.S. for assurances Assange will be permitted to rely on the First Amendment, that he will not be discriminated against at trial because he's Australian, and that he will not face the death penalty. The court also ruled Assange may be able to file additional appeals to block the extradition, but that will depend on how the U.S. responds to the court's request. Assange has been held in London's Belmarsh prison for 5 years, awaiting possible extradition to the U.S., where he faces up to 175 years in prison for publishing classified documents exposing U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. We'll have more on the story after headlines. The UN Security Council approved a resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and the release of all remaining hostages. The resolution passed 14-0, with the U.S. abstaining. Nearly 6 months into Israel's war on Gaza, it's the first time the Security Council successfully passed a ceasefire resolution after four previous attempts and continuous obstruction by the United States. After the resolution passed, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu blasted the U.S. for what he called retreating from its, quote, principled position and canceled a planned visit by an Israeli delegation to Washington, D.C. U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres said a failure to implement the ceasefire, quote, would be unforgivable. Palestine's U.N. Ambassador Riyad Mansour spoke after the vote.
This must be a turning point. This must lead to saving lives on the ground. This must signal the end of this assault of atrocities against our people. A nation is being murdered. A nation is being dispossessed.
We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. Despite the ceasefire resolution, Israel's continued to pummel the Gaza Strip. A bombing of a house in Rafah killed at least 18 people earlier today, including at least 9 children. This is one of their surviving relatives.
Nine children, the oldest was 8 years old. They all had nothing to do with this. They fell asleep with the news of the Ramadan ceasefire, only to wake up. They didn't wake up. They are not here anymore. I have no one left in this world. No one.
Officials say at least 12 Palestinians died after hundreds swam into the Mediterranean Sea to retrieve aid that had been airdropped northwest of Gaza City. The UN Human Rights Council published a draft report Monday that found reasonable grounds to believe that Israel's committing genocide in Gaza. UN Special Rapporteur Francesca Albanese writes, quote, "The overwhelming nature and scale of Israel's assault on Gaza and the destructive conditions of life it has inflicted reveal an intent to physically destroy Palestinians as a group," she wrote. In Baltimore, Maryland, search and rescue efforts are underway after multiple vehicles plunged into the Patapsco River following the partial collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in what local officials are calling a mass casualty incident. Two people have been rescued so far, one severely injured, but some 18 others could still be trapped in the freezing cold water. The four-lane Francis Scott Key Bridge is 1.6 miles long and part of the Interstate 695, a key commuter route. Maryland Governor Wes Moore has declared a state of emergency. The bridge collapsed after a large cargo ship collided with it early this morning. The 948-foot vessel was just minutes into its journey to Colombo, Sri Lanka, when it hit a column of the bridge. The bridge was built in 1977. In Senegal, Bassirou Diomaye Faye has declared victory in Sunday's presidential election. His main rival, former Senegalese Prime Minister Amadou Ba, called Faye to concede Monday after provisional results put Faye at over 53% of the vote. Faye turned 44 on Monday. He'll become Africa's youngest elected president. He has vowed to fight corruption and poverty and to direct Senegal's revenue from natural resources to provide better economic opportunities for residents. Faye spoke Monday from the capital, Dakar.
The Senegalese people have chosen to break with the past, to give substance to the immense hopes raised by our vision of society. I hope that our vision of society has given substance to their aspirations. I pledge to govern with humility and transparency, and to fight corruption at all levels. I pledge to devote myself fully to rebuilding our institutions and strengthening the foundations of our way of life together.
Bassirou Diomaye Faye is backed by the popular opposition leader Ousmane Sonko, who was forbidden to run. Until recently, the two men were sitting in prison cells, but they were released just 10 days before the election after outgoing President Macky Sall granted the pair amnesty. In Ecuador, the mayor of the coastal city of San Vicente was found shot dead in a car Sunday. Brigitte Garcia was 27 years old, Ecuador's youngest mayor. Her communications director was also killed in the attack. Ecuador has been under a state of emergency since January due to rising violence by armed groups linked to the drug trade. This is Ecuadorian President Daniel Noboa.
The assassination of the mayor of San Vicente and her communications director also remind us that this fight is not over. It has only just begun. It also gives us a warning and precise information that there is narco-terrorism within public institutions and there is narco-terrorism among public officials, which we are cleaning up. Still, very soon, this will come to light.
NBC News has come under fire by its own star anchors for hiring former Republican National Committee Chair Ronna McDaniel as a political analyst. On Monday, MSNBC hosts, including Mika Brzezinski, Joe Scarborough, and Joy Reid, all called out the decision on their live shows. Rachel Maddow, MSNBC's highest-rated anchor, devoted a 30-minute monologue to the news.
The person who is the head of the Republican Party during Donald Trump's time in office and during his effort to throw out the election result and stay in power anyway, and during his effort to run for election again after having done that, is Ronna Romney McDaniel. And she pitched in and helped. She helped set in motion the part of the plot that involved sending fake Trump electors to Congress.
Rachel Maddow added, quote, "You're priming the American public to not accept the results of the next election either," she said. Chuck Todd also fiercely attacked his own network. A New York appeals court on Monday reduced Donald Trump's bond to $175 million in a civil fraud case, down from $464 million, and gave Trump an extension of 10 days to pay it as he appeals the case. The ruling means New York Attorney General Letitia James will not be able to enforce the judgment against Trump just yet, including the seizure of his assets. Separately Monday, a New York judge rescheduled the start of Trump's hush money trial for April 15th. Trump's lawyers had sought to postpone his first criminal trial, arguing the recent release of over 100,000 pages of evidence made it impossible to prepare in time. The judge harshly disagreed. We'll have more on that story with David K. Johnston, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. The U.S. Supreme Court's hearing arguments today in a case that could severely limit access to the abortion pill mifepristone, which is used for roughly two-thirds of all U.S. abortions. Last year, the Fifth Circuit Court sided with a right-wing Texas judge who ruled the FDA improperly eased regulations on the bill to make it more accessible some 20 years ago. The Supreme Court that overturned Roe v. Wade in 2022 will now decide whether to reverse the FDA measures, which made the available through the mail and via telemedicine. It could also roll back the FDA's decision to lengthen the window within which mifepristone can be taken, which is now through 10 weeks of gestation. And here in New York, Home Health Aides ended their six-day hunger strike Monday, during which they called on the city to end grueling 24-hour workdays. The home health workers, the majority of whom are women of color and immigrant women, have been demanding New York City Council Speaker Adrian Adams bring the No More 24 Act to a vote. Democracy Now! Spoke to some of the hunger strikers outside City Hall.
For many of us working 24-hour workdays, we are forced to work these kinds of shifts. Because if we refuse, then a company won't assign us work. Only 24 hours or very few hours. So we really need to stop this kind of practice.
We will continue to fight against the 24-hour workdays until Adrian Adams passed the No More 24 Act to stop it. Otherwise, she will have to step down.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
The High Court in London has put the extradition of Julian Assange on hold until the U.S. provides Britain with more assurances about how the WikiLeaks publisher will be treated in U.S. custody. The court asked the U.S. for assurances that Assange will be permitted to rely on the First Amendment, that he won't face discrimination at trial because he's Australian, and that he will not face the death penalty. The London High Court also ruled Assange may be able to file additional appeals to block the extradition, but that'll depend on how the U.S. responds to the court's request. Julian Assange has been held in London's Belmarsh prison for nearly 5 years, awaiting possible extradition to the U.S., where he faces up to 175 years in prison for publishing classified documents exposing U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. Julian Assange's wife, Stella, spoke outside the courthouse just before our broadcast.
Today's decision is astounding. The courts recognize that Julian is exposed to a flagrant denial of his freedom of expression rights, that he is being discriminated against on the basis of his nationality, an Australian, and that he remains exposed to the death penalty. And yet, what the courts have done have been to invite a political intervention from the United States to send a letter saying it's all okay. I find this astounding. 5 years into this case, the United States has managed to show the court that their case remains an attack on press freedom, an attack on Julian's life. the courts haven't agreed to look at is the evidence that the United States has plotted to assassinate Julian, to kidnap him. Because if it acknowledges that, then of course he can't be sent to the United States. Julian is a political prisoner, he is a journalist, and he is being persecuted because he exposed the true cost of war in human lives. This case is a retribution. It is a signal to all of you that if you expose the interests that are driving war, they will come after you. They will put you in prison and they will try to kill you. Julian is just a few days away from the fifth anniversary of his arrest and imprisonment in Belmarsh prison. He has been in Belmarsh for 5 years without conviction, and the charges against him are to punish him for publishing the truth, for publishing evidence of the war crimes committed by the country that is trying to extradite him. Now, the UK courts have invited the United States to issue assurances. The Biden administration should not issue assurances. They should drop this shameful case that should never have been brought. Julian should never have been imprisoned for a single day. This is a shame on every democracy. Julian is a political prisoner. He is a publisher, and he is being published for expressing his political opinion, for expressing freedom of the press in its purest form. Free Julian. I ask everyone to rally behind him and call for his freedom. Call for the Biden administration to drop the case and support House Resolution 934 before the U.S. Congress to drop this case. Thank you.
That was attorney Stella Assange, the wife of Julian Assange and mother of their two young children. We're joined now by British MP, that's British Member of Parliament, Jeremy Corbyn, who served as the leader of the Labour Party from 2015 to 2020. He's standing outside the High Court. Welcome back to Democracy Now! MP Corbyn, if you could start off by responding to the court's decision, and if you can explain it in lay terms.
Thanks, Amy, and it's a real pleasure to be on the program with you. And this morning there was a decision by the court which, as Stella has pointed out, effectively invites the USA to give some assurances. But it also gives the opportunity for a further appeal by Julian against his removal to the USA. But if we can sort of unpick the whole thing, the reality is the pressure needs to now go on to the Biden administration, go on to President Biden, to say, look, you are trying to get somebody extradited from Britain under the Espionage Act, the same act that was used against Daniel Ellsberg, to be put into a supermax prison for the rest of his life, a death penalty. Why? Because he told the truth about Afghanistan, about Iraq, because he told uncomfortable truths about many other issues around the world. And if Julian goes down for this, every serious journalist around the world is going to be slightly more cautious about exposing war crimes, exposing corporate greed and so many other things. And so I appeal, if I may, through you and your audience on Democracy Now!, we need the maximum pressure all across the USA on the Biden administration, on the candidates in the forthcoming election, to say, drop the charges against Julian Assange. We've had a big crowd outside the High Court here, and the date has been set for return here on May the 20th, and we'll obviously be back here. But I should also say the support for Julian is growing. We've got good decisions out of the European Parliament, that's the European Union Parliament. We've also got good decisions out of the Council of Europe, which is a parliamentary assembly, I'm a member of it, of all European countries. We've also got the support of a significant number of governments around the world, Mexico, Brazil, Colombia, and so on, all around the world. And so we have got through today. We've got a slight move forward, but it's no more than that. It's now up to us, all of us, who believe in democracy, believe in freedom of speech, to put that pressure on the Biden administration and, in the case of Britain, on my own government here, where the Home Secretary ultimately has the right to decide whether or not an extradition goes ahead. Whatever the courts say, ultimately it's a political decision by the governments of the day. And there's a growing number of us in the UK Parliament that will continue putting that pressure on as well.
And Jeremy Corbyn, you mentioned the support for Julian among institutions in the European Union. How likely would it be, regardless if the British authorities and the courts decide to extradite him, that the European Court of Human Rights might intervene in the case?
The next stage would be to take the case to the European Court of Human Rights. The European Court of Human Rights is not a European Union institution. It's much older than that. It was founded in the post-war settlement when the European Convention on Human Rights was set up. And it is a court that meets in Strasbourg and has judges elected from every European country. And pretty well all of them, except Russia and Belarus, are in the European Council of Europe and therefore in the European Court of Human Rights. And the case would go there under the convention rights. And it's significant, the numbers of members of the Council of Europe Parliamentary Assembly that have shown their support for Julian Assange. Now, obviously, that would be a political expression. This would be a judicial decision. But if it goes there, that would be, in my view, a good thing. But the much better option would be if President Biden recognized that within the terms of his job as President of the United States, to defend the US Constitution. Does the US Constitution not protect the right of free speech, the right of assembly, the right to publish? That's really what it's about.
And there have been some media reports that the Biden administration was considering a plea deal, which would end up with Julian pleading guilty to a lesser charge, but then not having to serve any time in prison. Your reaction to, do you think this is another a fallback position that the Biden administration is considering?
Well, it shows, if the Biden administration is even thinking about that, that shows they're having second thoughts about their decision to pursue the Espionage Act against Julian. I don't know what negotiations have gone on or not gone on. What I do know is that Julian has suffered unbelievably in almost 5 years in a supermax prison in Britain, the most maximum security prison we've got in this country. The conditions there are pretty awful. And before that, he was 5 years almost in the Ecuadorian embassy. My principle is that he is being punished for publishing extremely uncomfortable truths about Abu Ghraib, about Afghanistan, and about much more else around the world. And he's an embarrassment to governments like those that have committed war crimes around the world. Well, surely all of us that believe in democracy should now be standing alongside Julian.
Jeremy Corbyn, I know you just have a minute to go, and I wanted to switch gears for a moment, though. I would assume if Julian Assange were out of prison and he were fully able to operate WikiLeaks, we'd be finding out a little more about Gaza. But I did want to ask you about Gaza and the UN Security Council resolution that Britain voted for, the U.S. abstained, calling for a temporary ceasefire during Ramadan. Your thoughts on the overall situation there, what Britain, what the U.S. Should be doing right now, and what you feel Israel should be doing?
The situation in Gaza is obviously a global disgrace. 32,000 people dead on top of the 1,000 people that were killed on October the 7th. And eventually, the UN Security Council not being vetoed by the USA is a testament to the strength of all those that have demonstrated all over the world in support of the Palestinian people to demand a permanent full ceasefire. That happened yesterday. The British government eventually voted for the Ramadan ceasefire, which is good. Which is a step forward, and that's only because of the sense of political pressure in Britain. We've had now 10 national demonstrations, and we've got another one on Saturday. We are an enormous growing force of people that want to see peace and want to see the withdrawal of Israeli troops, an end to the occupation, and justice for the Palestinian refugees. And Netanyahu is now in a difficult position because, in effect, he's been disowned by the rest of the world. And even the USA didn't veto the UN resolution yesterday. And so I do appeal to those good people in Israel that have always opposed the occupation and continue to oppose the war to keep up whatever pressure they can there. We need a ceasefire to save life. Listen, 32,000 dead, half of whom are children. Famine, starvation, and as the weather warms up in Rafah, and I've been in Rafah, it's not a big place, it's going to be cholera because of the lack of sanitation. Children dying on the streets for lack of food, lack of water, lack of medicine, when a few kilometres away there's food, there's water, there's medicine in unlimited supplies. The agenda, I believe, of the Netanyahu administration is to force the Palestinian people of Gaza through the Rafah crossing into the Sinai and create another Gaza. And with that, another Nakba. It's time to stand with the Palestinian people. And at least we made some progress at the UN yesterday, but we've got to go a lot further and a lot faster to stop the bombardment, stop the killing, stop the bombing, and get the food and medicine in urgently to support the Palestinian people.
Jeremy Corbyn, we want to thank you so much for being with us again. Member of the British Parliament, served as Labour Party leader from 2015 to 2020. He's standing up outside of the London High Court, which has put the extradition of Julian Assange on hold for a few weeks until the U.S. provides more assurances about how the WikiLeaks founder would be treated in a trial and to guarantee that he would not face the death penalty, though he does face up to 175 years in prison. Coming up, we will look more at how Israel's continuing to attack Gaza despite the vote by the UN Security Council calling for a temporary ceasefire during Ramadan. Back in 20 seconds.
So you think you can tell heaven from hell, blue skies from pain. Can you tell a green field from a cold steel rail? A smile from a veil. Do you think you can tell? Did they get you to train your heroes for ghosts, hot ashes for dreams?
Wish You Were Here by Pink Floyd. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Mimi Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Israel is continuing to attack Gaza despite a vote Monday by the United Nations Security Council calling for an immediate ceasefire during the remaining 2 weeks of Ramadan and calling for the release of hostages in Gaza. 14 of the 15 nations on the UN Security Council voted in support of the resolution, which was drafted by the non-permanent members of the Council. The United States abstained, ignoring a request by Israel to veto the ceasefire resolution. The U.S. had previously vetoed three other ceasefire resolutions. Israel denounced the UN vote, as well as the U.S. decision to abstain. The Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, responded by canceling a visit to Washington, D.C. by a high-level delegation this week to discuss Israel's plans to attack Rafah. At the United Nations, Palestinian Ambassador Riyad Mansour praised the ceasefire resolution.
This must be a turning point. This must lead to saving lives on the ground. This must signal the end of this assault of atrocities against our people. A nation is being murdered. A nation is being dispossessed. A nation is being displaced for decades now, but never at this scale since the Nakba.
Israel's vowed to ignore the resolution. In a post on social media, Israeli Foreign Minister